Welcome back to the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, brought to you as always by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. We're joined now by Nick Lecky, former K-Stater, former NFL player, who was with us a year ago to talk some K-State and Chiefs football, and it's that time of season to break down the football gridiron years with K-State and the Chiefs, and Nick is with us. Nick, how you doing, man?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day, and K-State's going to be in Nashville and try to take care of some business.
Yeah, let's talk about the matchup against Vanderbilt. Certainly, K-State hasn't been tested in week one or week two. That's kind of how it usually goes. But now, a road test against a Vanderbilt team that many people say is on the rise in the SEC.
And I think Vanderbilt will always have that moniker, just because I don't think they'll ever escape that sort of – they're not quite Kentucky football, but they're like one ring above that in the SEC caste system. And so they'll always be on the rise. You know, they got Jay Cutler as famous alumni. And I think they're just one of those teams where, unfortunately, man, in that kind of power vacuum of the SEC, they'll always be, you know, middle of the pack.
Let's talk about K-State and what they've done so far. Certainly, Bill Snyder is known for having teams that score on the defensive side or special teams. We've seen that in the first 2 weeks. Is this about what you expected to see through the first two games with K-State, or are you surprised in certain areas?
No, I think in week one, I think, you know, it was pretty tight, and I think everything was on point. And then that punt return in the second quarter for a TD really, really just broke that game open. And then I think for them to have four passing TDs to four different players week one was fantastic. I mean, because, you know, here all of us were thinking, oh, man, look at the stable of running backs. Like, let's get that going. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Ertz has a bit of a Michael Bishop cannon. And I say a bit, right? I don't say he's Michael Bishop.
Right.
You know, so I don't just throw that phrase around, but it's like there's some potential. And then you see in week two, kind of you see that kind of stable of backs where, you know, they really didn't run the ball that much. But, I mean, you see Barnes in there doing his thing. And then to see McCoy, who I think, you know, when I went there during camp, they told me, they're like, hey, yesterday Mike McCoy juked out seven players on the first team defense. I was like, whoa. And then we saw him on Saturday with kind of his marquee play where he ran. I mean, goodness gracious. That, as an O-lineman, I love seeing that. And then, you know, I think Barnes has that potential as well to run over people like that, like he does.
When you played for Coach Snyder, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, because you, of course, played for him. You were part of the program, a big part of the program when you were there. And this is no accident that K-State scores a lot of touchdowns, special teams, and defense. 109 non-offensive touchdowns since 1998. Was that a major emphasis when you were there at K-State? How did Coach Snyder and the staff preach those things? Because it's not something that just you stumble upon and have 109 offensive touchdowns.
I think what you have is you know, kind of an NFL phrase where, you know, you're utilizing every bit of your roster. You know, you're utilizing all of those, you know, what is 120 players to play for you. And with the ability in a Snyder system to go from being a walk-on to being a full-on starter on a full scholarship, I think that really motivates your walk-ons, your backups, to really give their all to the special teams unit. And you have guys who they know that that's the only way they'll be able to see the field. And they know that there's a rich tradition of special teams play. And the thing that gets lost, much like being offensive lineman on a pass play, is that you have 10 other people on a punt return who are trying to block it, and then the actual punt, and then you have those same guys who are running back and getting their blocks without blocking in the back to enable those TDs. So I think it's tradition. And the fact that, you know, it's what you do at K-State, and it's expectations. So not only do you expect to get a TD, you know, you fight to get that TD. So it's kind of like this thing where it's kind of like, you know, it's one feeds off the other. Iron sharpens iron. And it's like you have a want and then an expectation to score on special teams.
former K-Stater, former NFL player Nick Leckie, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. So after the first two games, what's an area that you might be a little bit concerned about or want to see more of going into the Vanderbilt game?
Man, it's tough. It's tough to say. I would like to see, and just because it's just week one and week two, is see what the passing attack is going to be. And something that kind of concerns me is, does K-State have that, and I know they do, but I want to see it, is that 8-10 play drive mentality where they'll just grind the defense down on when they're on offense. You just grind them to where in the fourth quarter they're gassed. To where you've gotten those 8-10 play drives that chew up, 7 to 8 minutes of clock. And so that's the one thing that I would be concerned of, is that time of possession. Like, and it's just in a sense of, getting those long drives and tapping them in the red zone and having that red zone success. And that's what I've seen, but I just want to see more of that.
Of course, you played offensive line there at K-State and NFL. When you look at this offensive line, there's supposedly going to be four starters back. And then, of course, starting center Navarre, he ends up retiring because of concussions and head trauma, and so he's still on the staff kind of as a graduate assistant or student assistant. That means they have three starters back from last year. But how would you assess the offensive line's performance and how good this line can be?
I think, this offensive line, it's still early on, so, the sky's still the limit. It's going to be more difficult when you get into SEC, this weekend, some SEC players. And then once you get into conference play, seeing everyone going. So they've been tested, but not truly tested. And I like the way that they've performed. And I like the cohesion where losing Reed, it was difficult. But they lost him early enough to where they could recover. And I think Adam stepped up, and I think he's done a great job in center. And I think I'll be curious to see if Dalton Reisner, too, if he's fully healthy. At right tackle. I know he left last week's Charlie game early.
The Big 12, Oklahoma got a much-needed win for the conference over Ohio State. They are certainly a playoff contender and certainly a contender to win the Big 12 title this year. Oklahoma State, that's the next team many people talk about. They're very explosive on offense, have a lot of kids back from last year. And then it seems to be the third team that people talk about is Kansas State. I personally have been looking at Kansas State, and I think that this is the way Coach Snyder loves it. Even though they are ranked in the preseason polls in the top 25, even though they're considered maybe the third or fourth best team in the Big 12, which is much better than previous years where, hey, K-State's picked the seventh or eighth, and of course they finished top four or five, that even though they are considered maybe the third best team in the Big 12, that there's still that disrespect. There's still that chip on the shoulder because, for me, when I look at this team and look what they have back from last year, I think they are a legitimate Big 12 contender, and I think they should be talked about with the likes of Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Would you agree or disagree?
I would totally agree. And for whatever reason, I guess maybe their Fiesta Bowl win back with their 40-year-old quarterback, Brandon Weeden, Dez Bryant era, is how Oklahoma State leapfrogged K-State in the conference hierarchy is just baffling to me. It just, in a sense, I get their ranked and everything, and explosive offense, and that really gets the ESPN types all aroused, I guess, for lack of a better word. But it bugs me, and they really haven't. I mean, have they won a conference championship yet, Oklahoma State? I don't think they have.
I think they got to share the 1 year. I think they got to share the 1 year.
Yeah. So it's for them to leapfrog, it's baffling. But to that point, too, is Snyder teams, I feel like because it's based off his model of work ethic and, work hard and everything will fall in its right place, is that to have that chip on your shoulder is fuel to their fire. Because I think at K-State you need that, because it's like once you start getting those pat on the backs and everything like that, then I feel people do get complacent. And I'm like, oh, cool, we've made it.
Yeah.
But if you have that chip, if you have the extra bit to play for, it really helps out. For whatever, for whatever psychological reason, you don't get to be a fat cat. You're like, okay, they're still not making us be top of the bracket, top of the champion or the conference. So you're going to play harder. And that's just the way it's going to be.
See, I think I have my finger on this, and we'll see if you agree on this. I think Oklahoma State's jump K-State because Oklahoma State's coach has a mullet. I think he's a guy that wears weird outfits, and he's a guy that, of course, had one of the best lines in all of sports. I'm 40. I'm a man. Talk to me. You don't see Bill Snyder saying those types of things, but isn't that part of it? I mean, when you think about Oklahoma, you think about Bob Stoops and Riverboat Gambler Bob, and a lot of that was created early on in his career as a coach, and yeah, he'd still go for it later on in his career, but it was Big Game Bob. Well, Big Game Bob didn't win a lot of big games towards the end of his career, but yet he got that moniker, and yet Coach Snyder just, you know, I don't know how he can fly under the radar in regards to his team, because each and every year when he coaches, his team's always competitive. He doesn't have the five-star recruits and some of the advantages that these other big programs have. And yet, over and over, year after year, it seems like people continue to underestimate Bill Snyder and his coaching staff. And he's been doing it for years. That's what I don't understand, is at some point when you keep creating and doing the same thing over and over, it's just insanity. I mean, have you not paid attention to Kansas State football in the Big 12 the last 20-some years?
Yeah, it's and I think you're right. I think a part of it is the sense of Oklahoma State being those media darlings. Mm-hmm. Is you're right. It's all hype. And to me, sometimes, I mean, NFL, it was funny. You'd see when they'd let reporters in the locker room, how they'd all kind of, if you saw one guy talking to another guy, in your head, you're like, oh, like, I'm going to go talk to that guy too. And then there'd be 10 guys talking to one person.
Yeah.
And so you kind of see this kind of feeding frenzy going on. And I think in the media, and I get it, you have to sell ads, you know, you have to sell viewership. Like, I totally understand that process. But sometimes the thought processes behind stuff is baffling. Yeah. Like, I forget, was it Joel Klatt or someone, I forget which one, who put the ESPN, like, the power poll in making Ohio State still a top 10 with a one loss. I'm like, what are they doing to me? Like, do they think we're misinformed or something like that?
It is frustrating. I'm with you on that. So how good do you think this K-State team can be? I mean, what are your expectations? What was your thinking before the season began? Has it changed as to what you think they'll do record-wise and where they'll finish?
I'm thinking, well, I'm always thinking, you know, national championship. And I think when once you get pitted up, once we get into conference play, we'll have a better idea. But step one is, you know, I think Big 12 champions for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that K-State goes in there undefeated, and then, you know, it'll be a tough matchup to whoever they play. Like, I don't, what's the criteria? How are they going to select the championship game?
Well, it'll be the four teams. The Big 12 championship game, yeah. Is that what you're asking? Yeah, it'll be the two best teams, the two best records. So there are no splitting into divisions. So you could have a K-State Oklahoma, and K-State loses one game. Oklahoma goes undefeated. Oklahoma beats K-State, obviously, head-to-head in Manhattan.
Right.
But they could have a rematch in the Big 12 championship game. I don't know. I'd have to look it up how they'll figure it out if there's a three-way tie as to which two teams will go. Because remember, we almost had that, or did have that, 1 year.
That was so asinine. But that made me mad that head-to-head was eliminated. That made me so mad.
I'm with you. So let me ask you this. Since the Big 12 title game, are you a proponent of the Big 12 title game, or do you think this is one of those Big 12 decisions where they reacted instead of being proactive, and it's actually going to bite them in the rear?
Is Bowlesby still in charge of our conference?
Yes, he is.
He's such a knucklehead.
not as bad as BB, believe it or not. I think BB was even worse.
The fact that he tried to push TCU Baylor as co-champions and they both got left out, I was like, dude, I mean, you can't do that. I mean, head-to-head, end it. You know, it's easy. It's an easy one. But so you're asking how I think they should do it, or?
Well, I'm asking are you in favor of them adding the Big 12 championship game? You've already played each other once.
They got. I think the blundering of not picking a true champion
mm-hmm.
really affected play. Where if you're a Big 12 conference and you're trying to present co-champions, like the 1 year K-State won it in 12. And then Oklahoma also was a co-champion, or not 12, but it was like last year or 2 years ago when K-State won it. And then they were like, oh, Oklahoma's co-Big 12 champion. And it's like, what? That doesn't make sense. Head-to-head, they beat them. Done deal.
Yeah.
So it really forced their hand to try and appeal to the NCAA and say, okay, look, we'll have a championship game. You know, we won't have that meaningless game on December 2nd where, you know, we're playing a regular game and, you know, all these other conferences are playing a championship game. And I think if you looked at it, I think it screwed the Pac-10 back in the day with USC in 2003.
Yeah.
The fact that they didn't have a championship game. So I think the trend is, obviously, TV runs the show. TV money runs it. So to have that marquee matchup December 2nd, it's good for TV money, and it's good to present a Big 12, like a true champion, even though the Big 12 is the only conference that plays each other.
Yeah.
And they do have a true champion.
I can see it working that way. I can see it blowing up in their face like it has before in previous years when they had the Big 8 championship, Big 12 championship game, but when they had 12 members. You have to play that extra game. Sometimes you have a rematch. And in this situation, you're going to have a rematch no matter what. So I think it can work either way. And I just feel like the way the Big 12 operates, it's going to blow up in their face this year. And then they'll be like, hey, let's not do it here in a few years. We don't want to do it anymore. They're just always behind the curve. Always behind the curve.
And they are. And that's what's so maddening. It's like, man, like, you know, they do the college football playoff selection from my literal hometown in Grapevine, Texas, the Gaylord Texans.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, man, you got these guys, you know, making these big decisions, and you are just blundering. You are absolutely blundering through, you know, this thing that you're trying to present. And it's like, you've really hamstrung the conference for a couple of years. And, yeah, it's like plugging your hole in the dam.
Yep.
You know, and it just makes me so mad. Yep. I'm like, why is this guy making money?
I'm with you. It is frustrating, no doubt. Okay, let's move on to the Chiefs here before we let you go. The Chiefs, a very impressive win, probably the most impressive win of any team in the National Football League beating the Patriots. That seems a long time ago, but that was last Thursday. Now they get the Eagles coming up this Sunday. Were you surprised that the Chiefs won that game? And what? It seems like a lot of people were surprised. I wasn't shocked that they won the game. I was shocked how they won the game, that they threw the ball down the field. They had tons of penalties. They were minus in the turnover category. It really surprised me how they won that game.
Well, and I think the cool thing and the interesting thing to think about is you look at a game and when it kind of like diverges. And was it who? What's the linebacker's name? So I want to call him. Is it Hightower?
Yeah, Dont'a Hightower. Patriots when he got hurt.
Yeah. So he got hurt, and it was 27-28 or 27-27. And then all of a sudden, you see that separation.
Yeah.
Like, you see that the Patriots defense not being sharp. Like, and it's crazy to think that if had he had stayed injury-free, that game might be different.
Mm-hmm.
Because then are we seeing, you know, last year's Alex Smith of, you know, he starts getting conservative again, and they try to pound it out and then lose it in the fourth quarter in typical Foxborough fashion? Or would they have continued on that same trajectory? Because they just looked a little off after he got injured. I was impressed that they were able to see that advantage and play off that advantage. You know, where it's like, you know, then Kareem Hunt gets this long running TD or passing. And it was really cool to see, and I was surprised. Because I thought they would, you know, lose by, you know, 3 or 4 points, and especially in Foxborough. But week one is crazy. And so that's about par for a week one NFL game.
Does that make the Chiefs, because last year for me, I thought all along and that the Chiefs were a playoff contender, but they weren't a Super Bowl contender last year. I didn't feel like they were a Super Bowl contender. That was kind of proven true against Pittsburgh. But this win at Foxborough changes my mind a little bit, but I'm not convinced they're going to continue to air it out and stretch the field because Alex Smith is still Alex Smith. And I don't mean that as a disgrace because he is a really good quarterback and all he does is finds a way to win. But do you think this win by the Chiefs, or maybe you already thought it before they won against New England, do you think the Chiefs are a legitimate and solid Super Bowl contender? Did you need that win to get you to think that way, or had you already thought that way?
No, well, you think that way, but then you like believe it. Mm-hmm. You're a convert.
Yeah.
You know, if you're on the fence, you know, in that locker room, you're like, okay, goodness, we just smashed New England in Foxborough.
Yeah.
We smashed them. That's going to give you confidence throughout the season because that's pretty much there, Pittsburgh, Seattle. Those are your toughest places to play in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the loudest. Those are the best defenses year in, year out. And those are like, that's, and if you can win there, you can win anywhere, and that gives you a lot of confidence throughout the season. So, you know, if you're down, you know, two touchdowns in a third or fourth quarter, you're not going to get bummed because you can rally around that. You can be like, hey, man, like, we won in Foxborough. Like, let's take it back to week one. You know, look what we did. You know, we can do this. And you have that confidence, and you're not just speaking rhetoric because you've done it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, we can do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely makes them legit Super Bowl contenders.
Quite the statement they made, no question about it, last Thursday in Foxborough. All right, time for the off-the-wall question, Nick. This is when we shoot a question at you and you don't know what's coming. There have been Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, and we've been talking about how they name hurricanes, which is very interesting that at some point they'll retire names of hurricanes if they're really, really bad, which I'm like, dude, do you not have like thousands of names to pick from? Why would you even have to retire one? So my question to you, Nick Lecky, is if you were in charge of naming a hurricane, what name would you give it? You're allowed to name one hurricane for your entire life. I don't know how big or how bad or how good it's going to be, but you get to name it. What would you name that hurricane?
I would name it KU. Oh, no, you don't want to make disaster associated with KU. That would be too mean. That's too low blow.
Wow.
You know, because you're talking about, you know, like actual, you know, people's lives and, you know, people dying
sure.
and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I understand the severity of it.
Sure.
I don't know. I'd name it like Fluffy Pants or something like that. You know, something where it sounds kind of cute. Or you could just go full on and just name it like something, some Swedish death metal band's name, right?
So
let people know the severity of it. It's,
yeah.
How about Hurricane Head for the Hills or something like that?
Yeah,
know?
That's not that, bad. That's yeah, Hurricane Iron Maiden, like something crazy like that.
Iron
you know,
Maiden.
Rough.
Yeah,
stuff,
exactly.
You know?
Just to let you know, you see it like when all the you see the news graphics, because I see Harvey didn't get the NBC graphic, but I see that Irma got the NBC graphic.
Yeah.
So you know, the Hurricane Head for the Hills or Hurricane, you know, Hide Your Husbands or something like that.
could be. Well, I don't know. I think it'd be more entertaining if you and I named hurricanes. I know that.
It would be, yeah.
Irma and Harvey seems kind of boring, really, to me. But, hey.
I know. And Harvey was my dad's middle name, and that's my six-and-a-half-year-old son's middle name.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So it's funny. So he was like, oh, you know, he's a topper, right? So he's a one-upper, my son.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, oh, Harvey had, you know, like, 20 feet high water, and Irma only has like 5 feet. And I'm like, hey, Harris, this is not the time to be, you know, topping, you know, just because it's your middle name, but it's funny. But I can't stifle his competitive nature at the same time, right? Because I'm like, yes, that's the way to think, though, you know.
Well, did he get that? Did he get that from you or from his mom?
No. Oh, mine for sure.
Yeah. You like the one topic?
I'm so competitive.
Yeah.
I'm not a one-upper. Not a one-upper. I don't want to be that guy, you know, like, oh, hey, I had two Chipotles, and you're like, oh, I had four Chipotles. But I just know, and then you know, that I had four Chipotle burritos.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd brag about that. That sounds like heartburn to me, but hey, whatever the case may be.
It's all right.
Man. Well, hey, I always enjoy talking with you. You're fun to talk to, and appreciate your insight, both for K-State and the National Football League. And we'll talk to you again later on this football season. How's that sound, man?
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
All right. Stay safe. Take care. That's Nick Lecky joining us today on the Sports Ticket.